got the weather channel on at the far side of the room where I'm sharing this program today, and it just dawned on me. The you know what the name of the hurricane is that's they're calling me calling the great the great monster. Yeah, it's Matthew, which is based upon Matanya, and Matanya means the gift of Yah. It's from Nathan, which is the Hebrew word to give, and Yah. So it's the gift of Yah. And so it's just amazing. People don't understand the basis of names. They would never have used that name. It's an interesting storm, though, of course, in that it was deadly as it passed over Jamaica and Haiti and the far eastern tip of Cuba, and then over some of the islands in the Bahamas. And I, you know, as I've watched the track of it go up the coast of Florida, and it's right now off the coast of Jacksonville, where our buddy Larry lives, it hasn't come ashore. It just looks like it's staying maybe 10, 20 miles offshore. And so they're getting the floods, they're getting the rains, they're getting the winds, but no eye. And as a result, this storm has just creeped up the Florida coast all day. It touched the, kissed the Florida coast the first time as a Cat 3, and it's still a Cat 3. So by the time this thing is all done, and we, tomorrow they'll go back in and show the water damage. My guess is there's probably going to be a lot of wind and water damage from this storm. It's a big one.
Billions.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's in the anywhere in the class of the Cat 5s that a decade or so, 20 years ago, came through Florida. But still, let's say. It's been a serious
just so much. I mean, and then you tear down all the lines with the winds blowing down the trees. It gets a long time to get out of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So here's the story that Yahweh said. So it shall come to pass in the last days, established and firmly fixed, completed and enduring, the house, the family, Beth. Is there any way to determine when you're translating Beth, whether you should translate it house, home, or family? Is there any, when you're just reading the Hebrew word where this says it shall come to be in the last days, established and firmly fixed, completed and enduring, Beth Yahweh, is there any hard and fast rule that says that should be the house of Yahweh, the home of Yahweh, the household of Yahweh, or the family of Yahweh?
Well, all of them pop up when you translate. I mean, when you look through the lexicon, so I always do it with all of them. I have house, home, household, family that resides in the house, home.
Right. House, home, and family, and therefore household.
Yes, you've got Yah lifting up, and you've got the mark, so.
Yeah, there's only three letters that comprise the name. It's the TH is the mark. The yod is the hand of God.
Now we're reaching down.
And the Beth is actually the letter was drawn in the form of a house or home. So the just for question, and you got the right answer. The answer is no. If you
one over the other and eliminate the other.
Right. If you, and house, home, and family are slightly different concepts, all related, but a house is the building.
Right.
The family resides in the building, and when the family is in the building, it is their home. So they're related concepts, kind of subsets, if you will, of one another. And the is there any other thing that might be important when you're looking at Beth? Is there another word in Hebrew that's closely related to Beth? Maybe just add one letter to it.
Bethi.
Bereth.
Bereth. I'm sorry. Yes.
Bereth, which is covenant. The only difference between Beth family and home, and Beth covenant is the addition of a Rosh, which is the individual that is listening, looking,
right.
Thinking,
observing, yeah,
observing. And so it's the covenant family, really, home of Yahweh. So it says, it shall come to be in the last days, established, firmly fixed, and enduring, the house and family of Yahweh. Now, if God wanted us to translate this as simply house, is the house of Yahweh, the which is, as people would misname it, the millennial temple, but Yahweh uses the term home or house or family 100 times for every one time that he uses a word that could be rendered temple. Is this house something that is going to endure forever?
The family, yes.
I said, is the house, the building.
No,
the house.
Not a temple.
No, kun means fashioned, formed, appointed, and developed, prepared and ready, constituted and furnished, upright, upright, and steadfast. Kun would suggest that, yeah, you could probably just leave kun as it's really firmly established. It's going to be there for 1,000 years is the answer to the question. The house is not going to endure there forever.
No.
But the verb, haya, that precedes it and follows it, haya on both sides, is an eternal verb. And Yahweh is going to, in year 7,000, yeah, he's actually going to destroy the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to do so for a very important reason. He's going to destroy the entire universe. And there are two reasons that he is going to destroy the universe. Do you know what they are?
Well, we've speculated that one of the reasons, of course, is so you'd be able to move in time and so forth, and then it'd be tears, and you could see the earth. You see all the things that happened before, and
right.
That sort of thing. That would be a downer.
Correct. And it would also be an unbelievable temptation to go back in time and to see, for example, to see the rise of someone like Hadrian.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you are, at that point, infinitely more powerful than he is. How would you, if you went back in time, it wouldn't be just this pain of watching what he did.
You might do what Moshe did to him.
Exactly. I wouldn't want that temptation. And so, in eternity is a long time to be tempted to go back and be exposed to that kind of stuff. So that's part of it. Yahweh wants us to be free to enjoy time and space and life. But if we go back, we not only have the opportunity to see what we have done that God doesn't even see, because he's covered us in a garment of light. So he can't even see our flaws. The last thing I want to do is go back and see my flaws.
Yeah.
But we don't want to see all the painful things that we as humanity have done.
No.
And so that's one of the two reasons. Now, there's another reason. It's not as profound as the first reason, but it's still interesting.
Well, it's going to build a new heaven and a new earth, as
right.
English translations go. And,
yeah.
So and he wants to build something without this net flow.
Right. Have you ever, I don't think that there's got to be flaws in what you do. There's got to be chaos. There's got to be ways for things to go wrong. Otherwise, it'd be like we talked about in the break.
Oh, well, like a
playing golf and shooting,
golf
and shooting an 18. You know, because they even get a hole in one of the par fives. That
I wouldn't talk about flaws or like chaos and building like evolution.
The second reason that he's going to destroy this universe is because he wants us to share in the experience of witnessing his creation of a new universe. And I think he's doing that not just because of the fact that anything that I've ever done where I've built a home, the first thing you want to do is share it with those you care about. And when you share it, it's a lot more fun than just the process of building, and particularly building on your own. But beyond that, I think that since Yahweh is a teacher by nature, He is extremely interested in us learning about the creative process, because I think that we're going to be empowered to go off. If we want to go out and create, we talked again in the break. I want to create a beautiful golf course. I mean, it's low on my priority list, but I think it'd be fun to do. And if we're going to go, and I would love to see if I can improve on the platypus. I'm going to set that a very low threshold on life forms. I'm going to see if I can improve on the platypus. So I think by witnessing creation, we're going to be we'll be able to learn what the right things to do are. And of course, we're all going to have a perfect copy of Yahweh's instructions, His guidance written inside of us, His Torah. So we're going to be well informed as to what we can and can't do, and not can't by the sense of there's limitations, but there have to be some sets of instructions, because if you do this, this is probably the way you want to go about doing this. It'll be a lot more fun that for you and have a better result than if you go, don't gallivant through the black hole. It could be a negative experience. The house of Yahweh is not going to, that he reestablishes here, is not going to endure forever, but the family that he establishes here will endure forever. So the house and family of Yahweh existing, Haya, in proximity to, this is Ba, within, the vicinity of, among. But it is, by the way, it is Ba, not all. All would be upon. Ba is by, with, and it's a proximity to a preposition. The summit of, the first and foremost. We talked about the only difference between Be'eth and Be'reth is the addition of a Rosh. What is the basis of the summit of the first and foremost?
Well, the mountain is a...
Hebrew word? What's the Hebrew word for summit and first and... That's the word for mountain. The Hebrew word for summit, the Hebrew word for first, the Hebrew word for foremost is Rosh. The Hebrew word, the Hebrew word that follows family of Yahweh, existing, Ba, is Rosh. In fact, it's Ba Rosh in the sense of the first word in the Torah is Ba. Rosh, Ba Roshith. It's the way that it's written in that particular form, meaning in the beginning. Rosh means beginning, first, foremost, top, summit, head. It's the letter that you add to Be'eth to make it Be'reth. It's the letter that transforms the family into the covenant family, and that's the letter that is here. And so this Yahweh's home is going to be in proximity to the first and foremost, the summit, the head of the Har. So he has now told us what letter needs to be added to Be'eth family of Yahweh to make it the covenant family of Yahweh, to make it the first family,
correct, yeah,
which is the Rosh. And it's Rosh is now addressing the Har. Har is mountain. A mount. For example, it's the Har Moria, Mount Moriah, to revere Yah. And so Har, now, but this is interesting. It's Har, Ha, Harim. Ha is the, and then Harim would be the mountains, the hilltops, the ridges.
Yeah.
Right. So it's the first and foremost, the summit of the first and foremost mountain of the mountains. Well, it's interesting because there are really three distinct places on the ridgeline that comprises Moriah. And I think really it's the only of the mountains in Yisrael. I think it's the only one like that. And so, when you look at it, you're looking at the base of that ridge is the city of Dode. It's where his Dode's home was.
Yeah.
And then you go up there, and you reach the next knoll above Dode's home, and it's not very far. I mean, you're probably 700 paces, and you
coincidentally,
you come to the threshing floor of Hebrusi, the Jebusite, and that became the Temple Mount, where the first house of Yahweh was established by Dode and built by his son Solomon. And it's where Hadrian came and decided that after his predecessors had demolished it and turned it into the Colosseum in Rome, that he was going to build a monumental shrine to himself and a vacation land, a wonderland for Roman legionnaires. But another 700 paces up the ridgeline of the foremost mountain of Yah, Mount Moriah, you come to the summit of the mountain. It happens to be the only place along the most contested, the most desirable ridgeline in the world, that nothing is built. The summit of Moriah still has nothing on it.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Well, I've seen it since you brought it up. I mean, it's really quite, that's amazing.
Yeah, you look at that picture, you look at Google Earth, you'll see it. Or you can look at it from photographs that are taken of it. But nothing there. And, you know, one of the interesting sights, of course, is you can see the summit right above the escarpment that's called the face of the skull, Golgotha. The skull, I've stood there. It's you have to actually go into to a very, very scary area. It's the Jerusalem bus station in the parking lot of that, which is in a heavily concentrated Muslim area outside the Damascus Gate. And when you stand in the parking lot of it, and you at that point better know Yahweh, or your life is at risk. Your life is at risk. But you can look right at that escarpment there, and the skull face is still obvious.
Yeah.
I've seen a gazillion pictures of it subsequently. Right. But you stand there, and look at it. There's a skull face there. That is the place, and you're standing right above. At that point, you're standing right above the limestone niche that was carved into the rock beneath where Yosha's upright pillar was for Pesach, and you realize that is where you're standing, right upon the spot, right above the spot where Pesach was fulfilled, and right below that is where the earth cracked and the blood of the sacrificial lamb dripped on the arm of the mercy seat. And so the Ark of the Covenant is in Yirmiyah's grotto, immediately beneath where you're standing when you're in the parking lot of the Jerusalem bus station. And you're looking up there at the escarpment, and then look at the top and at the summit, which is, that is really the summit. That's what God's talking about here, of the first and foremost mountain. There's nothing there. A little grass and kind of a disheveled old tree. That's it. Imagine the place where everyone, Muslims wanted to plant their trophy and say, okay, Allahu Akbar, Allah is greater than Yahweh. We're going to put our shrine to stupidity right on top of where the Romans had destroyed the house of Yahweh, the temple, and where Constantine's mommy wanted to build cathedrals over everything. You know, documenting the place, and been all of these buildings ever since, and there's nothing there, not even a graveyard there. Now, off to the side, there was a one-time used grave. You know, I've been there too, and seen it, the empty tomb.
It just occurred to me that we always talk about the Malachs, or Hasatan in particular, it's not creative. He uses what's already there before. and built his case by twisting that.
Mm-hmm.
And all these religions have come to town, from the Romans to the Muslims,
mm-hmm.
and all the Christians along the way. They don't build on anything creative new in a new place, do they? They always just twist whatever's there.
Correct. Yeah, it's all regurgitate and take what's there and use it again.
I would think, why wouldn't they build on the land that's not done? But it wouldn't occur to them, probably. They'd much rather build on an old foundation, but still.
Yes, like a lot of the single most famous, the largest Muslim mosque in the world. In Istanbul, in Istanbul, Blue Mosque. It was Constantine's Cathedral. They just repurposed it. But the only one that's genuinely theirs was actually repurposed too, the Kaaba. It was a rock pile back in the days of pagan Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
So God has got this perfect place to build his home. That's where he says he's going to build it. He himself is going to establish it there. He's going to establish it there when he returns. And ain't going on the Temple Mount.
Hey.
It ain't going to happen on the Temple Mount. I think the Temple Mount is destroyed.
Yeah.
And the reason I think it's destroyed is that earthquake that runs east to west.
Outline,
that goes right through the Mount of Olives upon his return. I think it's going to do two things. It's going to make the Dead Sea live again. It's going to create fresh water, living waters that give life to the Dead Sea. But I also think it's going to create this beautiful waterway of living waters. And I happen to be a big fan of water. I think water just adds so much to an environment. I think he's going to have this beautiful cascading white water, rapids of waterfall that's going to go from the springs that rush up under the Mount of Olives, which would be the Mount of the Spirit. So these are the living waters, the cleansing waters of the Spirit coming up from the Mount of the Spirit, the Mount of Olives. It's going to go right through where the earthquake fault is now, that will have buried all the rubbish associated with the Temple Mount and all of the Roman Catholic and Muslim crap that's been built there over the years. And God's going to build a beautiful bridge of light that's going to bridge between the city of Dode, his favorite child, and the covenant family home right there on the summit of Mount Moriah. That's how I expect it to be. So that's what he says.
No, that's a beautiful concept.
Yeah, and that's where he says, so on the first and foremost mountain of the mountains, lifted up, supported, and sustained, lifted up. So you know, if you're going to lift it up, if you're going to support it, you're going to sustain it, where are you going to do it?
Right.
Are you going to do it down there and in the bottom of the valley? Are you going to put it on the top of the summit of the first and foremost mountain? Yeah, of course. As part of these elevated places, Gibeah. These elevated places, marvelous. It's why Zion, which was used by the way, and the previous statement was about Zion. It said, Zion's going to bring forth the Torah. That these things are all part of what God is establishing here right on Zion, which is the Zion of the three steps along the ridgeline of Moriah. Right. And just as a thought, too, three is a really important number. I must have misspoken on our last program because there was some inference that I said that 10 is the number of empowerment. And no, 10 is not the number of empowerment. 10 is only an important number. And that it is, there are 10 statements, but the 10 statements are comprised of 3 plus 7. Right. 7 is, of course, the most important number. That's the empowering number. That's the number of Yah. And by the number of Yah, that is the completeness of Yah. Yah is 1 plus man 6 equals 7. So God with his creation, with his covenant family, is God's idea of perfection. That's the completeness of God, if you will. But 3 is an important number. Like, for example, there are three sets of 40 Yobel that comprise Yah's calendar.
Right.
And three is important because father, mother, and child.
Right.
That's a family. He's talking about the family of God. To have a family, you got to have three. You can't, you know, the families, a minimum size for a family is three. Mother, father, and child.
Yeah, his name, you've got two people, and if you include the one of increase, and let that be a symbol of children,
right.
You could be increasing them too, but obviously,
correct.
Family, then you got three there in his name, his very name. So.
Correct. Right. So there's three is the name, is the number of a family, father,
mother
and child. And in this particular case on Moria, what you've got is the father is up there on the summit. This is Yahweh. He's created his home. His favorite son is on that same ridgeline. That's the city of Dode, the household of Dode. And running right through it now is the set apart spirit. Yeah, the flowing waters of the spirit coming right out of the Mount of Olives.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a three that is in concert with what we're seeing here on Mount Moriah. Then it says, so then every Gentile shall flow forth with joyful countenance, beaming with happiness, and shining brightly over this. Well, the interesting thing is, the only Gentiles that are going to be around to see this are those that are part of the covenant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. You know, I could be mistaken, and I don't want to set this as fact. We know for fact that that those of us who are adopted into the covenant and who are celebrating Teruah and who are the beneficiaries of the Teruah harvest, whether that's in 2026 or 2027, that those of us who are doing it, we're mostly Gentiles. And by the way, you can be a Yisraelite goyim.
Sure.
Yahweh refers to Yisrael as goyim quite often.
Yeah.
So it is possible. And it's not a bad thing necessarily to be a goyim if you're one of these goyim, which are the one of these goyim is one of those that have been adopted into the family and has returned with Yahweh on this day. We are light, man. We're watching this from the bleachers,
right?
And we are ecstatic. So every Gentile that's come back for this, we're ecstatic. Now, the point I was going to make that I can't say is absolutely reliable is I wonder on the Day of Reconciliations when, this is now at the conclusion of 3.5 years of what let's just call the Great Tribulation. You know, there's 3.5 years of
into it, and then
it. You got the Magog Wars and that sort of thing, and then that midpoint on Friday the 13th in year 2029. You know, you got Apophis that hits. You got the side of Carne Viejo, the volcano that creates the great tsunami. You've got the nuclear exchange. It's a really bad day. And then the Torahless one imposes his edicts. He strikes to kill Yahweh's two witnesses. The plagues start. I mean, that's a really a bad time. And it's that point where you either take the mark of the beast. If you want to buy and sell, if you want to, essentially keep from starving, you're going to take the mark of the beast. And if you do, it's over. In fact, the midpoint in the tribulation?
Yeah, no choice.
It's over.
Yeah, you've made your bed.
You've made your bed at the midpoint of the tribulation with one exception. The midpoint of the tribulation, Yehudim are not all yet reconciled unto Yahweh. Yehudim still and Yisrael still have that opportunity. Gentiles, no. It's over. And so I'm not sure there's going to be any living Gentiles that survive his return. I think all these Gentiles are those of us who have come back with him.